From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, a shamanic teacher speaks out. Here's what's happening. Is it cold outside? Dangerous record low temperatures causing cancellations of some holiday festivities in the plains of the Midwest over the weekend before the cold front now pushing into the Ohio Valley, the eastern seaboard. It is freezing. Got down to 1 degree in St. Louis. Not like Los Angeles at all. It's almost like the day after tomorrow. Donald Trump has won the Electoral College vote and secured his election as the 45th president of the United States, as the latest and perhaps last stop Trump movement failing to gain traction in all state capitals. Dr. John Curtis with us, onlinecolumnist.com. Well, he pulled it off, John.
He sure did. And, you know, a lot of this, George, is just hype in a dead news cycle. Although there's a lot of news with terrorism today. You know, the assassination of the Turkish Russian ambassador in Turkey. And, you know, in the truck ramming in Berlin. So those are that happened today. But generally speaking, you know, you look at this news cycle and this hype over this Electoral College that's been going on now for about, about a month or so, you know, since the election, was such nonsense, such hyperbole. And, you know, they had even a Harvard University professor, I don't know if you saw him, predicting that Trump could lose as many as 20 to 30 electoral votes because people were going to switch their votes. And, of course, none of that happened. And it just shows you that you cannot, and this is the major takeaway from the 2016 election. The voters do not trust the mainstream media anymore. They've been fed, you know, they talk about fake news happening on the internet and, you know, the social media areas, but where the real fake news is happening is really in the mainstream media, the way they hyped, you know, the Clinton victory to the point where everybody in the country believed that it was going to be, including a lot of the pundits, they believed that it was going to be a record landslide victory for Hillary. It didn't turn out that way.
Not at all.
But I think this Electoral College finally, you know, puts an exclamation point and closure on Trump's really historic win in those key battleground states. And I think that the media that continues to rip him on a daily basis, you know, has to sort of take a pause and think to themselves, are we really going to lose more and more market share by not getting behind the president-elect, soon-to-be president? And, you know, I think that's what this tells us about this Electoral College finally, you know, voting for him.
All right, thank you, John. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Sad story over the weekend, a $20,000 reward now being offered in the hunt for the killer of a three-year-old boy during a road rage incident Saturday in Arkansas. Authorities in Little Rock are searching for an older black Chevrolet Impala. The $20,000 reward is being offered for information leading to the suspect's arrest and conviction. The boy and his grandmother were on a shopping trip. They stopped at a stop sign when another driver, apparently angry at the delay, stepped out of his car, opened fire. The boy was hit at least once. The grandmother was not struck. Unbelievable story. Have you ever been out to a restaurant or any place else and you have seen someone choking and somebody had to perform the Heimlich maneuver on them? Well, Dr. Henry Heimlich, who invented the maneuver, which is used to help victims of choking, has died at the age of 96. He died at a hospital in Cincinnati following complications from a heart attack. He invented the life-saving technique in 1974. Zsa Zsa Gabor, the Hungarian beauty whose many marriages, gossipy adventures, and occasional legal scuffles kept her in tabloid headlines for decades, has died. She was 99 years old. Earth is about to enter a stream of fast-moving solar wind. They call it the G1 class. Geomagnetic storms expected to begin in a few days and continuing right through Christmas. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Stephen, what do we have?
Oh, great stuff as always, George. And you were just talking about this whole phenomenon where the solar wind will increase in speed, it's caused by what we call a coronal hole in the solar atmosphere, thus letting more of the solar particles called solar wind to stream in. So there's a very high probability for people in the area around the Arctic Circle, they may indeed get to see more auroras during the Christmas holiday season. But George, just as if we needed to certify the cold like the Electoral College did with Trump, officially on Wednesday, naturally, the December solstice, or the winter solstice begins, 5:44 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. But George, from the live sky, so many cool things to talk about as we wrap up 2016. And next week, hoping to talk about exciting things that you can see, really good stuff for 2017.
God, 2017 already.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, my God, Steve.
Where did it go? So here's some of the live sky that we can talk about right now. Last quarter moon will occur on the 21st. Obviously, if you look into the eastern part of the sky around midnight, the opposite side of the moon illuminated, still beautiful. But what's happening, too, if you look into the into the southwestern sky, Venus, the goddess of love and beauty, very reminiscent of that magical star of Bethlehem, in a telescope, it appears to be half illuminated, thus increasing its incredible brilliance that we have in the sky. But as we wrap it up, there's so many really cool things. I wanted to remind everyone that as the moon goes to new, thus that happens on the 29th, here's a really good Dr. Sky tip. Look into the eastern sky by about 10 p.m. local time, and you'll see the beautiful constellation of Orion. Right below the central star of the three belt stars, George, is this amazing nebula, common knowledge, the Orion Nebula. What's interesting, it's about 1,344 light years away. Even more impressive, in a small pair of binoculars, you will be watching the closest region of massive star formation close to the Earth. The object itself, though it looks tiny and hazy in binoculars, great in a telescope with no moon, some 24 light years in diameter. Galileo observed some four brilliant stars we call the trapezium, and he, of course, pretty much identified and discovered those four stars that light up the nebula. Try that in binoculars and a telescope, more precisely a telescope. They look, George, like four tiny little gems, like diamonds, put into this most amazing piece of jewelry. This, something not to miss, the beautiful Orion Nebula.
Love it. Stephen, thank you. Dr. Sky, Stephen Gates, and his website, drsky.com, which you can find on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, the next time you're pumping gasoline into your car, how long will you be able to do that? Well, what are the alternatives? In a moment, alcohol can be a gas. David Bloom back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast biofuel pioneer, alternative energy expert David Bloom, founder and CEO of the Bloom Distillation, LLC. He is well known for his book that he wrote years ago, Alcohol Can Be a Gas. And it's been a while since I've had David on the program to get some energy updates. Since he was last on, the price of gasoline has plummeted. David, what is going on?
Well, heck, what's going on is always an interesting question with gasoline because there are so many things at play at any given time, politically and economically. But gasoline is at a 17-month high right now. So the pundits out there are expecting a banner year for oil profits, and we expect to see quite a bit of activity in oil prices going up. So what often makes the difference is the amount of oil that OPEC is pumping. So OPEC just the other day agreed to cut back the amount of oil 1.2 billion gallons per day, barrels per day. And so also the United States has been producing less and less every year, even with fracking. So we're down pretty close to a billion gallons a day, barrels a day, over the last handful of years. So we're looking at all around the world beginning to not be able to find easy oil anymore, and eventually, you can't keep pumping to keep the price down, which is what's been going on the last few years. And, it's was always meant to come to an end, and it's slowly but surely coming to an end. So, little by little, we're going to see the price of oil go up and probably some spikes in the next year because it's been kind of artificially low priced.
While this has been going on, what has it done to the efforts to get more ethanol in the fuel and more alternative fuels?
Well, not, almost nothing, because outside of the United States, people have already figured out that, you know, if there is any free oil around, well, you know what country has the army to secure it. So, you know, basically, other countries are already looking past oil and trying to come up with something that they control and own, and alcohol is the most reasonable alternative to that, and it's cheaper than oil. So, you know, there's a lot of move toward that, and around the world, we've been, including Saudi Arabia of all places, we've been finding people interested in moving to alcohol for a lot of different reasons, not just for fuel, you know, for cars, but for a lot of other things as well.
Now, since you were last on with me, David, a couple of years ago, where we were talking, of course, about alcohol can be a gas, what has happened in terms of alcohol production?
Oh, it's gone up dramatically around the world. Just in the U.S. and in this year, they're expecting, the EPA is just mandating another 6% increase, or I shouldn't say mandating, but what we have is the renewable fuel standard, which is a recognition that the United States, for its military and economic security, has to start moving away from oil, because it's quite predictable that it's going to get expensive and controlled. And so we have a standard that says not just alcohol, but any renewable fuel can be used to fill in a percentage of the total fuel supply. And every year that percentage goes up, even though the oil companies fight tooth and nail to prevent the renewable fuel standard from increasing the amount of energy that doesn't come from them. So so basically, the renewable fuel standard has finally been resolved after many, many oil company lawsuits, and is back in action and is increasing the amount of alcohol that Americans will use. But that's nothing compared to the rest of the world. China just wants to double its energy supply from alcohol up to 4 million tons per year in the rather near future. Because have you ever seen those pictures, George, of the pollution?
Oh, my God. I saw some today. They can't even breathe out there.
Yeah, well, they could cut their atmosphere with a fork and knife, you know. And, and you know, the thing that reverses that is alcohol. Brazil used to have air just like China. And when they moved to alcohol, even without catalytic converters on the cars, the air in Sao Paulo, which is a 20 million person city, cleared up to be just wonderful and clean and breathable. So China has been talking to us about alcohol because it is 99% pollution free compared to gasoline. So, I mean, I can make that even clearer. In California, we have very strong smog laws. And you have to get your car inspected for its smog system every 2 years. So when I bring my truck, which is a 2000, certainly not some new flashy, you know, high-tech truck, into the smog station, I have zero. There's three pollutants. You know, there's carbon monoxide. That's Dr. Kevorkian's, you know, death gas. Then there's hydrocarbons, in other words, soot, which you know, can cause all kinds of problems in your lungs. And then there's nitrous oxides, the brown stuff in smog. So when you know that, there are three things they test for. And in the carbon monoxide category, I have zero parts per million. In the hydrocarbon department, I have zero parts per million in my alcohol-powered truck. And nitrous oxides, four parts per million, but I'm allowed 400. So I'm better than 99% cleaner than the very same truck running on gasoline. So you can imagine how anxious China is politically, because you can imagine smog is a political issue in China, you know, to clean up the atmosphere. That would make whoever's in power a lot more popular. Not to mention the costs, the health costs to the, you know, nationalized health service of China that all that pollution causes. So, you know, there's a lot of you know, cleaning up the pollution from cars is more important maybe for our health than it is for the environment. But China, of course, it's horribly polluted cities makes that really obvious.
What's happening with companies like Tesla? They're selling cars, but are they making an impact with electrical cars?
No, nothing at all, really. Tesla and any of the electric car companies, Nissan's got a little electric car and stuff, they're never going to make much of a difference. You know, basically, if you look at, if they get all their wishes and they're able to build as many cars as they say they can, all right, giving them every benefit of the doubt, they might have something like 20 million cars on the road over the next decade or two. So basically, how many cars are on the road? 1.6 billion cars are on the road. So 20 million cars is getting there, but almost a drop in the bucket. So what Tesla is really good at is pushing forward technology that has big subsidies and grants to get it going, and he's a master at taking advantage of that. So more power to him. You know, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of applications that electric cars make sense in. But in terms of slowing down the amount of fossil fuels that we're putting into the air, it won't even stop the increase in fossil fuel pollution in the air because, gosh, you know, people keep reproducing. There's more people and more cars every year, and so it'll swallow up any savings from electric cars.
When we take calls next hour, David, I would like a lot of truck drivers to check in because
Absolutely. Years
ago when you and I were talking, diesel was getting close to $5 a gallon, which, of course, would increase the price of goods that we get and everything else, and a lot of the independent truckers really could have gone out of business. Where is diesel right about now?
Well, you know, diesel, it's interesting with diesel. People say, the only thing you can use to help replace petroleum diesel is biodiesel made from vegetable oil. And that works. But remember, when we make alcohol or we make biodiesel, we're making them from plants. So in the case of biodiesel, well, soybean oil is one of the popular ones in the United States that we turn into fuel. And, of course, with alcohol, we're turning carbohydrates like starch and sugar into alcohol. So it turns out that plants make carbohydrates a lot better than they make vegetable oil. So a whole acre of soybeans might only give us 50 gallons of vegetable oil. Now, that's okay because the vegetable oil is surplus to what we use soybeans for. We use soybeans to feed pigs. And with that much oil in soybeans, if you fed the whole soybean to pigs, I'm not even going to let you visualize what that would look like with that much oil running through a pig's digestive system. So, basically that oil was always separated anyway to have soybean meal, which we feed the pigs, and they would do something with the oil because, you know, you're talking about a diarrhea fest if the pigs were, having to eat all that oil. So basically it's a good thing that we're using the surplus oil for something that really helps. Now, the thing with alcohol is we can get 1,500, 2,000, and even more than that gallons per acre, depending on the crops we use to produce the starch or sugar to make alcohol. We demonstrate at our site here in Watsonville, California, right near Santa Cruz, we have a cattail marsh, for instance, which is good for processing sewage before it goes into rivers, but it also makes an enormous amount of starch, and we can have thousands of gallons per acre processing, nutrients that are coming out of the sewage treatment plants and make our fuel enough to supply the whole country, really, if we just went ahead and did some final processing on sewage with cattail marshes. And you may have noticed that that sewage treatment plants, no one's living around them. They give it lots of space because sewage treatment plants really smell. And so there's always land on sewage treatment plants to put in cattail marshes and harvest these thousands of gallons per acre while cleaning up the water, cleaning it up so well that it's legal to discharge into rivers or lakes or oceans. So we do more than make alcohol when we have an alcohol plant and we grow crops for it. We actually have a lot of other benefits that reduce the money people pay for sewage treatment, et cetera. So if you think the smog is bad in China, oh, my God, the sewage system there is awful. There's 2,500 cities in China that have a million people or more and have no sewage treatment system.
No, not at all. David, stay with us. We're going to come back, and I want to talk with you about your preference. If you could just do whatever you wanted to do for our fuel systems, what that would be. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. David Bloom with us. And David, of course, is an expert on alternative energy. His book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas. That book's still available to people, David, isn't it?
Absolutely, George. It's available everywhere. You know, it is a bestseller, and it's on Amazon. We also have it here. We sell it direct at alcoholcanbeagas.com. And with that, we have a couple extra goodies that go along with it, like some DVDs of lectures I made and stuff. And so it's a good how-to book on how to make small-scale alcohol. In other words, for you and, you know, your neighborhood or your, you know, prepper, you know, collection of people or any number of people. In other words, it's good for up to about 100,000 gallons a year. Now, the bigger sizes than that, well, you know, that usually is left to people who are building alcohol plants that handle those sizes. But up until 100,000 gallons a year, you can build your own alcohol plant like we have here in Watsonville at our test facility.
So, David, if you had that magic wand and you could do whatever you wanted to do with fuel, what would you do?
Well, gosh, George, you know, I was asked that question by Ted Turner, CEO. You know, he's a pretty, you know, forward thinker about energy and that kind of stuff. And we went to him looking for investment for Bloom Distillation, mm-hmm. to build plants. And the CEO said, well, don't bother me with little stuff. What do you think Ted would really be interested in? And we said, well, what we'd like Ted to do is put up the money to build one alcohol plant, you know, a small one, like 10 million gallons a year, which, you know, it fits on half an acre. It's a pretty small thing. And we want one in every county in the United States. Now, there's 3,000 counties in the United States. But the idea is we'd also put up two alcohol stations in each one of these counties, and we would sell alcohol fuel at the pump for a dollar less than gasoline every day, 24 hours a day.
Wow.
So,
wow.
We figure that if we had a plant open in every county and stations, everyone would know where you could get fuel for a dollar less than gasoline. So
no matter what the price of gasoline?
No matter what the price of gasoline. We make alcohol in our plants. If we're using a waste product, like let's say, George, your Nori beets, you know, your beet juice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they squeeze that, all the pulp that's left over is also able to turn into alcohol. It's got a lot of carbohydrates that are not in the juice, and we can use enzymes and this and that and dissolve those into liquid and then ferment them with yeast so it becomes like a wine or beer, and then our equipment distills that into alcohol. We're actually in negotiation with several sugar beet companies in the United
States.
That's
amazing. And you're not polluting at all, are you?
No, everything that comes out of the plant is edible. In other words, there's nothing toxic that comes out of an alcohol plant. My alcohol plant right here in Watsonville is in the middle of our organic farm, 14-acre organic farm. And so here we are in the middle of an organic farm where nothing toxic can exist and keep certified, and yet we can have an alcohol plant in the middle of an organic farm and it still qualifies as safe for the environment and safe for our people.
What do you think has happened with the price of fuel as low as it is right now? Has that been a boon for the economy, in your opinion?
Well, George, you know, it's good for the economy in a way, because what looks like low fuel prices really translates into more money being taken out of your income tax to subsidize oil. If you go online and look for the real price of oil, just go on Google, you'll find a dozen articles that talk about how much out of our income taxes we subsidize gasoline. And you'll find that the subsidy, depending on how they do the accounting, ranges from $5 to $15 a gallon. So basically, you know, whenever the price of oil is going down, some of it has to do with the market and some of it has to do with our ability to subsidize or control the price of oil. So for the last few years, we've had Saudi Arabia overproduce oil, And, of course, that's helped the manufacturing economy to have lower energy costs in the United States. That helps us be competitive with the other parts of the world that have low energy prices or have other advantages over us, you know, in the marketplace, like lower labor or something. So that does help the United States companies. But heck, George, my alcohol distillery company is in the United States. We're an American company. We make our products here in Virginia. And, you know, I contribute to the economy, too. So, and I make cheaper fuel. There's 2,700 stations in the United States that sell alcohol right now. So basically, you're looking at, you know, availability in many, many counties around the United States, and people who use alcohol are giving their money to farmers and to people within the United States instead of Arabian countries that, you know, are exporting their oil to us. But, you know, only 30% of our oil now comes from the Middle East. So, you know, I mean, the tax subsidies,
which, by the way, is a good thing
that we give the oil companies. I mean, I remember back during the first part of the war on terrorism, we gave the oil companies $80 million to increase security at oil refineries because of fear of terrorism. That was more than the entire budget for solar energy research for the United States. And we subsidized the oil companies who were guys who didn't need any money, you know? So, I mean, you could get me going on this all night, but basically...
I plan to, David.
What I'm saying is, although that seems good for the United States, you know, being able to have cheaper fuel to make our products, where are things made now? They're made all over the world, you know, not just in the United States. And we're in South Africa, for instance, and we're talking to companies there where they turn the power off 3 hours a day and it rotates through all these districts. So you end up with load shedding, and what they call load shedding, meaning you're rationed on the amount of electricity you have. How can you, you know, make a product there and have your factory reliably run? Well, the answer is everybody who is doing something of importance has a generator, and a big generator. So the fuel costs are astronomical in other parts of the world, and even so, they have to produce their own electricity, which in South Africa is over $2 a kilowatt. Okay, here we're paying 12 cents a kilowatt. So, you know, having an alternative fuel to be able to make your electricity can not only save your business from, you know, not being able to produce, but it also can reduce the cost of your utilities.
What's happening in Canada?
Oh, Canada. Well, just a week ago, a big Canadian sugar company that makes it from beets came down to, look over our plant, mm-hmm. and they want to go ahead and start making alcohol with all their beet waste, just like we talked about a moment ago with the guys who make your beet product.
Right.
But we also had a dental office in Canada, in British Columbia, who had bought back kids' candy, had over a ton of candy, and they trucked it down to our plant, and we turned the Halloween candy into alcohol.
The sugar, right?
Yes, all sugar, you know, and some starch, you know, various, like various, you know.
I guess you could do it with pasta, too, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Pasta's wonderful. It's pure carbohydrate. So a lot of what we're doing now is turning waste products into alcohol. That's the primary, in America, that's the primary nature of our customers. Like we talk with Del Monte and Dole. During the summer in California, they take a constant parade of dump trucks to the landfill with all the stuff left over from making fruit cocktail and ketchup, you know, all the potato, tomato skins and pulp. And so that is an enormous problem all over the world. Something like over 1 billion tons of waste go to the dump from the food processing industry. And we can make at least 20 billion gallons of alcohol from that in the United States, which, you know, would probably replace about a sixth to a seventh of our total fuel bill, which is not insignificant. And it wouldn't choke our landfills anymore, and it wouldn't make methane in the landfills, which, wow, that's a pretty bad, you know, climate-changing gas, and not to mention it's toxic. It's natural gas, but you don't want to be breathing it. So, you know, we can put an end to waste. And, you know, as a farmer, you know, and a guy who designs, you know, systems, waste is not a word in my vocabulary. If there's a surplus of something, like I mentioned Saudi Arabia earlier with dates, you know, the kids, they're like Happy Meals now, and they're not not wanting to eat the traditional food of dates. Well, the dates are surplus, and so we're going to be making alcohol from dates there. That won't be used as fuel. It'll be used in chemistry.
How many millions of gallons or how many gallons are you pumping out every year?
Well, we only have a little research plant here, which is a 100,000-gallon per year plant. So
okay.
it's pretty small. The ones that we build for others are 1 million to 10 million gallons per year, and those are considered very small. Out there in the Midwest, they're at least 10 times as big. They're like 50 million gallons per acre year or 100 million gallons per acre. And those actually are unwieldy and not as profitable as a small plant using local crops and local waste. Moving stuff around costs a lot of money, and getting rid of the byproduct, if you have too much of it, is also expensive. And the big plants use more energy than we do because of their size. Smaller plants can make better use of its byproducts than the big plants can. So we take the byproducts from our alcohol plant after we've fermented and distilled and taken all the alcohol out. Well, all the leftover pulp and water goes into a methane digester at our site here in California. And we make natural gas, methane, in a controlled way, and that methane goes to fuel our boiler, which we make alcohol with, using the steam from the boiler, so we don't even use, you know, fossil fuels to run our alcohol plant. And the byproduct from the methane digester goes into our cattail marsh, which I mentioned earlier as a way of treating sewage. It also treats our stuff. And, you know, if you can see some of this on our website, bloomdistillation.com. We even have a little drone tour through our plant that you can see. But then we raise fish on the byproduct after, you know, we've done all the other work. We're raising catfish and bluegills right now in a pond that we have receiving the processed waste after the cattails. And then, and there's always more, George, then the sewage or so-called fish water that comes out of the fish pond, well, it goes and waters the crops on our farm. So we don't let anything squeeze out of our system without our getting a use out of it. But so what this says, though, is that it's not food versus fuel. It's food and fuel, because we produce an enormous amount of food with the byproducts from alcohol fuel, and we don't need fossil fuel fertilizers to do it. America is an agricultural powerhouse. If we can harness that and make a bit higher value products than cow feed, then we're talking about millions of jobs, an enormous amount of revenue and tax revenue to help run all of our services. Like in the Midwest, where they have all the alcohol plants, the pools are open there. The libraries are open all week. You know, the tax revenue from a local alcohol plant keeps the economy thriving, and people have more work there, and people have a real good living there. So right now, living near an alcohol plant in the Midwest, you have a pretty nice place to live compared to the jobless desert the Midwest was 20 years ago.
Are you getting any support from the automobile companies with this?
Absolutely. The automobile companies have come around to realizing that alcohol is a sales feature and not something annoying that they have to deal with. This last year, the EPA asked the car companies, did they have any problem if we raised the amount of alcohol in fuel up to, you know, 15, 20, even more percent. And already in lots of the United States, we see 15% alcohol in the gas compared to the 10% that was in there for the last 10, 15 years. So it turns out that up to 30% alcohol mixed with the gasoline, you don't have to do a darn thing to your car to run on 30% alcohol. And I want you to make a really clear point about this, because you and I have talked about this, George. Since 30% of our gasoline comes from the Middle East, if we replace that with 30% alcohol, we would have to make no changes whatsoever to the fuel system, to the delivery system of fuel. All of that would replace the foreign oil. And guess what? All that money would go into America instead of overseas, and we wouldn't have to spend any money converting our car fleet. Already, all manufacturers of cars in the United States guarantee that their new cars will run on 15% alcohol, even though they'll run on 85%. They don't advertise yet, but we've been in the Ford truck plant and gone from start to finish. Every part that they put in the vehicle, there are no different parts anywhere on that assembly line. And when we got to the end of the assembly line, we asked the shift supervisor, what is different about a flex fuel or alcohol and gasoline vehicle? Well, you know, over half of the vehicles that Ford makes now are flex fuel. So basically, what's the difference? And it's the software. It's just in the computer of the car, all we have to adjust is the amount of air with fuel and the timing of the spark, and that's all done by the computer nowadays. So a little extra software in the car is all that's different between an alcohol gas flex fuel vehicle and a gasoline only vehicle. So that's the biggest secret they're not telling you about, is your car will already run on alcohol, and with minor changes can run all the way up to 85% alcohol, which is how alcohol is sold at 2,700 stations around the country right now, and it should be 127,000 stations, but, well, you know who controls those stations, and they don't want to see it on their land.
Well, that's a good point. David, as we look at all of this, I want you to talk about E85 again, and tell us exactly what this is.
Well, E85 is 85% alcohol and only 15% gasoline. That 15% gasoline is in there to help the car start on a cold day, because alcohol is a lot safer than gasoline. It doesn't evaporate as well, and that's hard to start your car in a cold weather unless you have something volatile in it. Now, there's better volatile things to put in alcohol, but the current standard is 15% gasoline. And that's sold.
I think we've lost you, David. He's gone. We'll get him back in. The technical glitches are out there today. David Bloom, our special guest, and, of course, we've been talking about alcohol can be a gas, and we're going to take phone calls next hour with David as well. And don't forget that the last 2 hours of the program, Hank Wesselman joins me live from Hawaii as we're going to talk about his work as a shaman. With some incredible things there, too. So make sure you're all part of that program. But you might know that when you go to the gas pump, there's a little tiny sticker on most pumps that say this certain percent of ethanol has been included in that gasoline. And that's pretty remarkable all by itself. But I think even though David presents an amazing program, the fact that gasoline is so cheap right now, the fact that it's just so cheap, it's going to be difficult to push this for a while. So, David, I think we got your back.
Well, George, this is the perfect time to tell the story about when I first went on your show years ago, because getting cut off on the phone is a common experience for me when I'm on your show.
I wonder why. do you say anything too controversial or what?
Well, you know, there's a lot of power out there that doesn't like what we say, but this is a good show to explain to everybody just how powerful your show is. Because when we were first on the air, we had a long show like this, and you went ahead and said, well, I want to give you the way to contact Dave Bloom, and so we gave out our website and our phone number. And back then, people called more, you know, and also the website was active, and so I was sitting there looking at my computer screen while I was talking to you.
Well, hold on for that story, because we're going to take a break, and we'll check to make sure you're still there when we come back.